The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of 55KRC, The Talk Station, and Clear Channel Worldwide.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, Cincinnati's only gun talk show. Join us. We're going to explore the topic of firearms and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Now here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRZ, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. I'm your host, John Johnston. As always, check us out on ballisticradio.com and facebook.com/ballisticradio. I was going to have a co-host this evening, but a Reds game was more important. So, and hey, they lost, which makes me sad. Anyway, our guest this evening is a really great guest, Kathy Jackson from cornedcat.com. I've been aware of Kathy for a while now just because she's been a popular internet figure for concealed carry issues for women. See, what tends to happen is, you know, for some reason there's a lot of confusion as to concealed carry issues for women, specifically firearm selection, how to carry them, how to conceal them. And the problem that I've discovered is that for whatever reason men feel, I don't know, knowledgeable enough to comment on something they have no first-hand experience with. Now, I can offer suggestions based off of things that I've read as far as what a good way to carry a gun for a woman is or not, but, you know, it boils down to I've never been one. I don't know firsthand. It's all hypothetical. So I decided, instead of regurgitating the same information that you always hear, I would kind of go straight to the source. Kathy is just really cool, and her website is definitely worth checking out, cornedcat.com. A lot of interesting articles there as far as a lot of things that you don't tend to think about with concealed carry, and it's not just for women. Also for men, too, a lot of really good information. I'll be talking with her in a minute or two. I get the point of today's show is just going to be to try and get some more accurate information out there as far as what is good or not good for anybody, not just a man or a woman or whatever, only because, you know, yes, there are some differences, and we're actually going to discuss those with Kathy. There are some things that are not different at all. Now, I know all sorts of women that, you know, I prefer 9mm. I shoot 9mm best. Really don't like 40 caliber that much because it tears my elbows up. 45 is okay, but I like having more bullets. I know a couple different women that shoot either 45 or 40 caliber better than I shoot 9mm. And, you know, at that point, especially someone that's using proper technique, it doesn't matter what gender you are. There are all sorts of women that shoot better than I do, and it's just, I don't know, it's very confusing to me that for whatever reason, it seems to be that the men in the industry either take one of two approaches to the issue at hand, and it's either a very misogynistic, like, oh, look at the girl with her gun, or just a very, they try and be supportive in a way that doesn't actually encourage any growth. So some other things we're going to be talking about. I'd planned on having a little bit of a discussion with my co-host this evening about that, but like I said, Reds game, more important. So I'm actually going to get to Kathy a little bit before the break, got about 4.5 minutes before we go to commercial. So Kathy, are you there?
I am. How are you doing this evening?
Very good. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate you taking time out of your Memorial Day weekend to talk to some dude on the phone from Cincinnati, but really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. That's wonderful.
Yeah, no problem. So if you don't mind, can you give us a little bit about your background and just kind of how you got into the industry, and we'll go from there?
Sure. I'm in Washington State. My husband and I have 5 kids. They're all teenagers and young adults now, but I got into shooting when my children were all babies and toddlers, preschoolers. The reason I did that is we moved to the middle of nowhere, and I was very concerned about being able to protect my family when my husband was not at home.
Right.
I was not going to have a gun in the house unless I knew how to use that gun. So I went out and I got training. And after I took that first class, I was seriously hooked. And then I took every class that I possibly could. I mean, I did all sorts of weird, unbelievable things to carve money out of the grocery budget so that I could get the training that I felt like I needed. And as that process went on, I started to write, I started to teach classes, and I got very, very involved in helping other people come to that same decision and then get the training that they needed.
Well, yeah, and it's been going rather well. Now, you've written a book, and you've also started doing training of your own at this point, haven't you?
That's right. The book is The Cornered Cat, A Woman's Guide to Concealed Carry. It's almost 400 pages of information about concealed carry for women. I start out with the ethical underpinnings of self-defense, of making that decision that your life is worth defending, and making the decision that you're willing to use lethal force to defend your life.
And just kind of go from there as far as...
Just go from there into the practical stuff, yes.
And it seems like a lot of people, we'll tangentialize here just for a minute, it seems like a lot of people will think of a firearm as a tool for self-defense, but they never make that ethical or moral decision as to, hey, I might actually have to kill someone. Do you think that's something that people overlook? Or
I think that denial is a very powerful force. That's pretty much the bottom line there. I think it's a whole lot easier to think, well, I won't ever really need to use it. I'll just show it to somebody and they'll run away.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, Hollywood does a really good job of convincing people that things that in real life would be very overwhelming or emotionally upsetting
right.
might not be that way, because it's just, as I said, denial is a very powerful force.
It's that whole, well, I've got the gun now, so now I'm safe sort of idea.
Right. The gun is talisman. It's a piece of magic.
Right.
And we don't have to know how to use it. We don't have to count the cost of using it. We just have it, and therefore nothing bad can happen.
Yeah. And that's something that we've been, that seems to be a point that I try and hit on every couple shows, just because I've noticed a lot of that too. It's like, well, I come to get a gun for self-defense. Well, all right. What else are you doing for that? So, now, how long's Cornered Cat been around? Because I remember reading that years ago, I want to say.
It would be years.
Yeah.
Actually, I started Cornered Cat as a website 2002-2003.
Right.
And I should explain to your listeners, the reason I chose Cornered Cat, it's my picture of what self-defense looks like.
Right.
If you have to fight, fight like a cornered cat. But I started the website in 2003 and worked on it and have worked on it continuously since then. In late 2011, I founded Cornered Cat LLC, which is my training company.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm teaching classes under that name.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually been teaching classes at the Firearms Academy of Seattle for the past 10 years, but now I'm also teaching under my own name as well.
Well, that's got to be an exciting step to take. I want to discuss some more things, but we're coming up on a commercial break here. If you don't mind holding the line, when we get back, we're going to talk with Kathy a little bit more about concealed carry and shooting issues for women and also for men. But right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. We're still talking with Ms. Kathy Jackson from CornerCat.com. Kathy, are you still there?
I still am.
Excellent. I've had issues in the past with this phone system, so I'm always pleasantly surprised when I've not managed to hang up on somebody. So we were kind of discussing a little bit as far as like the ethical underpinnings of self-defense and acknowledging that. I'm curious if when you first got into training, were there some things that you ran into that were do you think more difficult because you were a woman or not? Or, I mean, what are your thoughts on that as far as that went
well,
for you?
John, earlier you used a phrase that I jotted down. You talked about people who are supportive in a way that does not encourage growth.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that my own early challenges, because, you know, I came to shooting as an adult. I had done some hunting with my dad when I was very young and then had never touched a firearm since then, and I had never handled a handgun until I was in my 30s. And for me, I was very, very blessed to be surrounded by people who were encouraging in the right way. When they looked at one of my targets, they didn't say, oh, that's awesome. What they said was, that's really good, and you can do better by doing this.
Right.
you know, there was always that expectation that, of course, I would continue progressing and would continue improving my skills. I have to say that when I talk to my friends, other women that I have worked with over the years, that's not an experience that's universal. One of the big stumbling blocks for women is an expectation that they don't want to learn, or that they won't learn, or that they won't be able to learn. And I think that it's way past time that we got over that and had this expectation of anybody who wants to carry a firearm or who wants to have a firearm that they will use to save their lives, that they, of course, are going to go out and get that training and get the skills that they need to do it well. So I've been very, very blessed in my own life, and I'd like to turn around and give that same blessing of encouragement to others and say, yes, of course you will learn, and of course you can learn.
Well, and that's really awesome. And I think that, and this seems to be something that gets discussed a little bit as far as like trainer requirements and things like that. And it's always interesting to me. I don't understand the concept of a training requirement as far as exercising a right goes, because to me personally, if I'm going to have the thing around, morally, I am obliged to know how to use it to the best of my abilities. And I've never understood those people that don't, you know, do the same thing as far as seeking quality training and things like that. I was curious too, is as far as like firearm selection goes and things like that, the old cliche is always, well, if you're going to get your wife or significant other or someone like that a gun, I always hear the 5-shot 38 or the small little, like a Ruger LCP 380 or things like that, which personally I can't shoot that well because they're not fun to shoot. But is there some sort of magic transmogrification that occurs when a woman picks up one of those small and comfortable guns? Or what?
As far as I know, no, there is not.
Huh.
A small, uncomfortable gun is a small, uncomfortable gun. I think the disconnect that happens there is that when you're looking at somebody with small hands, you know that they need a smaller grip. Now, I should say, of course, not all women have small hands. Many women have hands that are as large as the hands of many men. So, of course, we're talking, looking at the entire population,
right,
rather than, you know, saying any one individual, blah, 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 blah. You got all that. But when you're looking at somebody with small hands, they need a smaller grip, but they do not necessarily need a smaller gun. A small gun tends to be much harder to shoot, tends to be much more uncomfortable to shoot, tends not to have the features that make the gun easy to use, tends to have a harsher recoil that makes it less pleasant to shoot, and most people, because of the shorter sight radius, find it more difficult to hit the target. You put all those things together, then you put this uncomfortable little gun in the hands of a new shooter, and you tell that new shooter, oh, this is the best possible gun for you. So she picks it up, and she shoots it, and she discovers that she does not love it.
Right.
And she thinks that she does not love shooting. Worse than that, she thinks that this is as easy as it's ever going to get.
Right.
Because you've told her that this is the best possible gun for her. I submit that those little guns are really best reserved for expert shooters. When you start out with a beginning shooter, I don't care, man, woman, or child, you start out with a beginning shooter, you want to get them something that fits their hand comfortably, the recoil is fairly gentle, the sight radius is long enough to be forgiving of mistakes, and that they can shoot and have some success with. You don't start out on the most difficult gun out there. You start out with something that's more comfortable to shoot.
Right. And it seems like, and I don't know why, but it seems like they've fallen out of vogue for whatever reason, but I've always thought of a 22 target pistol as far as getting the fundamentals of shooting down, one of the best options there is. Have you noticed that not as many people are suggesting that? Do you think it's a budgetary concern where they can only afford one gun, so they're trying to get one that's suitable for self-defense as well? Or what are your thoughts on that?
I'm not sure what drives that. I am a fan of a 22 for learning the fundamentals. But once those fundamentals are mastered, then you move on to a defensive caliber.
Right.
I think there is a certain budgetary thing, which my grandma used to use the phrase penny wise and pound foolish. You know,
right,
it's somebody who tries to save money in the little things and ends up spending a lot of money in the long run.
Right.
22 ammunition, I realize right now, is it's a different thing. But yeah. Historically, it's been much less expensive, so you can get in a lot more practice. You get more bangs for your buck, I should say.
Right.
So ideally, that really is a great way to start.
Well, and it's kind of nice, too, because a lot of pistols these days have a 22 conversion kit or something similar enough to it that you can sort of learn the basics. Now, you mentioned self-defense calibers, and we'll go back into self-defense handgun selection. It seems like the popular thing right now seems to be 380s. Most of the folks that I hang out with are 9mm or 38 fans, mm-hmm. at least. Where do you fall into that?
I am going to tell you that it depends. Mm-hmm. I will say most instructors out there, most of the experts that you talk to, tell you 380 caliber at the minimum, up to a 45 at the maximum. Anything mm-hmm. that you choose in between those. Some will tell you 9mm at the minimum, or a 38 at the minimum, up to a 45 at the maximum.
Right.
Now, those minimums and maximums are somewhat arbitrary.
And they're making some assumptions that aren't always necessarily true as well, I guess, as far as hand strength or previous injuries or things like that.
Exactly. I think if you have some specific need that would preclude handling a full power firearm, then yes, it would make sense to go down to a lower caliber. I should add, though, I have a quote in my quotes file. It says, "There is no exception to the rule." That everyone wants to be an exception to the rule. So I'm going to say, yes, there are reasons why you might want to go with a smaller caliber, but for the most part, most people are going to be better served by sticking within that 380 to 45 caliber window, and ideally at 9mm or above. For me, you know, when I look at it, I think most new shooters should probably stick with a 38 or a 9mm, not because those are some be-all and end-all of self-defense, simply because they are widely available, less expensive than 40 and 45, and there's not the recoil that you need to deal with the bigger calibers.
Right.
Without that recoil, you avoid building a lot of bad habits. If you can build good habits to begin with, then when you make that, if you later want to make a jump upward, you can do that from a base that has that good habit. But if you start out with something where you're fighting against building a bad habit, it can take you longer to make the same amount of progress.
Right.
And so, you know, I think for the most part, if you start with a 22, move up to a 9 or a 38 for self-defense, and then later on, after you've been shooting a while, after you've reached a certain level of skill, then you can go ahead and look at the entire world of calibers that are out there and make your own decision.
See which ones you like best and all.
Right.
And all that good stuff. Obviously, going back to the handgun selection thing, I guess, what are your thoughts as far as a manual safety? I hear a lot of people say, well, I've got kids in the house. And then the discussion of a manual safety comes up or things of that nature. As far as what are your thoughts on child-proofing a gun?
John, wait just a minute here.
Mm-hmm.
Did you just tell me that there are people who would say that they would be willing to leave a gun lying around just because it had a manual safety? They would leave it where a child might get it, but it's okay because it has a manual safety?
Yeah, that seems to be the disconnect in logic. And my favorite thing to say to that, and you kind of hit on it, is if your parenting plan, and I'm a parent, I've got a four-year-old.
Okay.
If your parenting plan involves your child getting to a loaded gun at all, you messed up. But
yeah.
I thought I'd get your thoughts on that, since that's something.
That would be my thoughts on that. That's insane.
Yeah.
I told you a little while ago, my husband and I have 5 children.
Mm-hmm.
We actually had 5 babies in 5 years. They're all boys.
Oh, I bet that was fun.
I'm not sure which year was more fun, the year that everybody was under age 5 or the year that everybody was a teenager.
I can't see a 4-year-old's enough for me right now, but...
So having said that, one of the things that I learned very, very early on is that the word childproof is mostly a lie.
Right.
You need to maintain control of this deadly thing. If you're not going to put it inside a safe or behind some sort of locking device that is enough to keep out an adult thief,
right,
then you need to have it actually on your body and under your personal control. There is no hiding it where the kids can't find it or putting it up high where the kids can't get to it.
Right.
My middle son was 2 years old, I walked into the kitchen at nap time and saw him sitting on top of my refrigerator.
Impressive.
Well, I thought so. He had managed to pull out the drawers and use them as a little stair step and climbed up on the counter and pushed the bread box over and climbed up on top of the fridge. And he was sitting there just as happy as a clam eating the candy that I had hidden in the drawer.
Nice. I guess the lesson there is that there's no place high enough for your kid to not get there.
Yes. And there's no such thing as, well, he just won't know where it's hidden.
Right.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Christmas time, when you were a kid, did you know where your parents hid the Christmas gifts?
Oh, I knew where my parents hid everything they had. But that was, I dedicated my younger years to that. So, yes, you know, that seems to be a common occurrence, is if you have something and you don't want your kid to find it, that is the first place they will go, is wherever you've hidden it.
Yeah. So I'm not a fan of saying, okay, let's choose a firearm based on the kid finding it. And I'm not a fan of leaving the firearm someplace that is not actually behind a physical lock or under the direct conscious control of a responsible adult.
Well, that seems to be a common thing, is it? For whatever reason, people don't, at least a lot of people that I run into, don't acknowledge that maybe they could just carry the gun around the house. But that's something I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about. We've got to go to break right now. When we get back, we're going to talk with Kathy just a little bit more about firearm selection and mentality and things of that nature. But you are listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
55 KRC.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 45 KRC, the talk station. Brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. For folks just tuning in, you can call us at 749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. If you're not in the area, I'll try and take your calls at the end of the show, but as always, I reserve the right to make fun of you if I feel like it, so just bear that in mind. Anyway, we're still talking with Kathy Jackson from CornerCat.com. Kathy, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Excellent. I appreciate you hanging out for the commercials there. So I have to sit through them too, so I don't feel too bad. But so we were talking a little bit about carrying the gun at home or not, or how to store it. What is that pretty much your preferred method? Just have it with you?
My preferred method is to keep it under my conscious control. Yes. I do have a full-size gun safe in my home. I also have a smaller lockbox that I keep in my bedroom. During waking hours, if I'm dressed, I'm wearing the gun as well. I have found that the easiest way to just not have to think about it. If I have control of the gun, if it's on my body, I don't have to think about it again all day. It works really, really well. I know that doesn't work for everyone, but for me, that was the answer for keeping it out of the reach of kids and within my own control.
Do you think that carrying the gun's a little bit easier than people think it is, or what are your thoughts on that? I hear a lot of people talk about comfort as far as selecting a firearm or things like that. I've never personally noticed when I have one on. Do you think that's an overstated issue, or what are your thoughts?
I'm going to be really blunt here.
Oh, we like that here.
I think that until you have made the decision that your life is worth defending and that you will do whatever it takes to defend your life, until you've made that decision, the gun will always be horribly uncomfortable and you won't be able to find a way to carry it. You might as well give up now.
So sort of a pathological thing?
Yeah, I think once you've made that decision, you will find a way to do it and you will find a way to make it fit into your lifestyle and it won't be uncomfortable to you at all. It would just be something that you do.
Cool.
So that's really my take on it. I think it's a lot more within your mindset than it is in your physical surroundings.
That's interesting. You're actually the first person that I've spoken with that's actually brought that up, and a concept I've never explored either, so I have to think more about that. Out of curiosity, what, I carry inside the waistband. I don't really wear clothes that aren't good at accommodating that. I'm curious if there is a preferred method or one that that you've seen work better more often for women than others? I mean, what are some of the ways that I guess that people could be thinking about carrying that gun if they're a female?
Okay, there are a whole bunch of different ways to carry. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you the biggest challenge that women face with concealed carry is that our clothing is a lot more varied than the clothing that men wear. Just, you know, men, you know, on the weekends you have jeans and a t-shirt. Midweek you have business clothes, which is basically still a shirt and slacks. There's not a whole lot of variation in what you're doing or what you're able to do. Typically, you can find one carry method that will work for 90% of your life.
Right.
For women, our clothing, we dress up, we have dresses, we have skirts, we have pants that don't necessarily have belt loops. We have a huge variety of things that we have to work around.
Right.
There are people who will tell you that that means concealed carry is more difficult for women. That's not true. It's actually somewhat easier for women because it's very much easier to adjust our wardrobe, but we have to be a lot more flexible than the guy has to be. And so that's really where the disconnect comes in. For me, my preferred carry method, I like to have it on my waist. I like to have it just forward of my hip in that appendix carry position. Mm-hmm. That's a position I'm comfortable with because I've been shooting for a long time and I know that my safety skills are up to par. The big advantage of appendix carry is, for me, I find it much more comfortable, much easier to control access to it because it's in the front of my body. The downside is if you're carrying in the appendix position and you make a mistake, you're going
to
die.
Yeah, that's that seems to be
the downside.
Well, it is, and it's funny you bring up appendix carry only because it came up on purpose one show just because that's how I carry, but it seems to keep coming up from different instructors, and every time it comes up, I get yelled at either online or via email about how dangerous appendix carry is.
Well, but I don't mind reinforcing that. Yes, appendix carry is dangerous. It's a gun. It's not safe.
Right.
Now, with that said, if you are carrying responsibly in a secure holster that covers your trigger guard, covers your trigger and protects it with a material that's sturdy enough to prevent the trigger from moving, whether the gun is inside the holster or out of it,
mm-hmm.
and you yourself are trained to keep your finger away from the trigger as you draw and as you put the gun back into the holster, then it's perfectly safe. It's only if one of those two things isn't in place. If you're carrying in an unsafe manner, that is, in a holster that doesn't hold the gun securely and protect that trigger, or if you yourself don't have the training to keep your finger away from that trigger as you're putting it into the holster or taking it back out, that's when it gets dangerous.
And it seems to be, too, that's it. And if you make a mistake, you die, like you said. It seems to be, too, that up until relatively recently, there weren't as many quality appendix holsters available that were specifically designed for that carry method. I'm a big fan of Keeper's Concealment, their appendix holster, but, you know, Dark Star Gear makes a nice one, JM Custom Kydex, all sorts, the CCC Looper. So,
mm-hmm. I've been playing with that Keeper's Concealment over the past few weeks. I really like his work. He did a good job with that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's
Now, with that said, I'm going to add that for women especially, but there are some guys who aren't going to manage to carry on the belt or aren't going to be comfortable with in front of the hip or whatever. So
right.
let me run down the other carry options real
sure.
fast. You have on the belt inside the waistband in front of the hip, which is appendix carry. You have on the belt either inside or outside the waistband, on or behind the hip. You have on the belt on the opposite side of the body in front of the hip, which is your cross-draw position. I don't really recommend cross-draw, but there are some people who have shoulder mobility issues.
Yeah.
It can work really, really well for them. So that's all the ones that put it on the belt. I discourage people carrying directly over the spinal cord.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you, if you want to carry the gun that far back, move it off to one side, so that it's almost but not quite small of the back carry, so that it's not directly over the spinal column.
Sure.
All of those...
Those lower back injuries sure come back to bite you when you fall down on your gun and all of a sudden you can't walk anymore. So
it's true, and it's a much slower draw.
Yeah.
People don't realize just how much speed they're giving up by putting the gun that far back.
Right.
All of those, you can imitate them by getting a belly band that you can wear under your clothing and It's basically an elastic pouch that attaches directly to your torso that you can put in any of those same locations.
Right.
And I, as a woman, I have found that that works really, really well when I'm moving from a pair of pants that does have a belt loop to a pair of pants that does not. I can simply change from my regular holster to a belly band, but keep the gun in the same position where it's familiar and where I've practiced the most with it, and works really, really well. For those, if that doesn't work, we've also got a whole bunch of options that will put the gun up under your left arm, assuming you're right-handed, for a shoulder holster kind of draw.
Yep.
Now, this isn't necessarily a shoulder holster. There are undershirt holsters. There are Pistolware makes an awesome belly band type that's an elastic band that goes right under your arm there. It works really, really well. And there is a bra-based holster that tucks into your bra under your arm
for that same type
of draw.
That would be the flashbang?
Actually, the flashbang is designed to ride in front.
Okay.
The one that I'm talking about is the Marilyn. It comes from the same company, from the Looper Leather Company, who make flashbang.
Right.
But it's designed to go right up under your arm. Then there is, of course, the flashbang, which attaches to the bra in the front. You access it by pulling your shirt up and yanking the gun straight down. It's surprisingly secure, surprisingly quick. I'm very, very satisfied that this is a safe holster that will do the job. And it's actually a very good product. And then, of course, we have the ankle holster.
Right. If you don't mind, we actually have to go to break here, and I want to talk more about ankle carry when we get back. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Glenn Beck.
This will blow your mind.
Tomorrow at 9:06 on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. For those of you just tuning in, we are accepting calls 749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. No one on the line right now. I might be able to get you on at the end of the show. Right now, we are talking to Kathy Jackson from CornerCat.com. Kathy, are you there?
I am here.
Hey, great. So we were talking about concealed carry methods for women, but obviously applicable to men as well. But you were just getting ready to talk about ankle carry.
Yes. Ankle carry has a very, very obvious drawback.
That would be the gun's not easy to get to?
It is not easy to get to. You cannot draw from an ankle holster while you're running away.
Mm-hmm.
And that matters because there are many circumstances where you might want the ability to get the gun into your hand, and you can't do it while you are still moving around. You have to plant at least for a moment in order to get to that gun. And that's a big drawback. The other drawback that goes with it, very much related to it, is if somebody tackles you, knocks you to the ground. I'm thinking specifically about a rape scenario.
Right.
It's much easier to get to a gun that's on your torso than it is to get to one that's on your lower leg or even on your thigh. So for that reason, I understand that some outfits pretty much require them, and I teach people how to use them. But I want to encourage people to think of that as a backup or an alternative method instead of as a primary method.
Right. Now, one thing we haven't discussed, and this seems to be, at least I run into this a lot in my area, women talking about carrying in a purse, and specifically in like one of the purses that's designed for a gun. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, a couple of things. First of all, I don't think it's a good primary method. Second of all, I think that every woman who does carry a firearm should own a purse that has a holster in it.
Do you mind expanding on that just a little bit? Or?
Sure. I don't believe it's a good primary method just because it's human nature to get lazy and a little bit sloppy about our safety measures.
Right.
And off-body carry is very, very, very difficult to constantly maintain the awareness that we think we're maintaining and that we want to maintain when there's a deadly weapon inside the purse.
Right.
So for that reason, I just don't think it's a good day-in, day-out method because I really don't believe that you can maintain that level of awareness all the time that you should. Now, with that said, I also think it's a really awesome way to carry occasionally. And I think that if, as a woman, if I have 15 outfits that work for concealed carry and one that doesn't, I know that I'm not going to throw away that one outfit. I know I'm going to wear it sometimes.
And that's when the purse would come in handy?
That's when the purse comes in handy. I'll also add that a purse offers a wonderful insurance against a wardrobe malfunction.
Oh, yeah?
You know, if you're out and about and you suddenly all at once just cannot stand to have the gun on you for one more minute because it's just become terribly uncomfortable, or the environment changes so that you can't keep your cover shirt on, or, you know, you've got three layers on and you have to take one of those layers off or you're just going to die of sweat, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Having a safe, securable, reliable place to put the gun can be a godsend.
And
it really can.
And see, that's something I never would have occurred to me because I've never had to deal with it. And that just seems to be the common thread. Now, something else that just occurred to me, and you kind of said it earlier, but would you say that as far as carrying a gun for a woman goes, the main issue is understanding that the methods you use to carry are going to be varied?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the takeaway, I guess?
Yes. Now, with that said, I think, you know the 80-20 rule, right?
Yeah.
That would be 80% of the value for anything comes usually from 20% of our activities.
Right.
Well, when it comes to concealed carry, we look at our wardrobe. Probably 20% of the clothes in your closet are the ones that you're wearing 80% of the time.
Hmm.
That gives us a really good clue about where we start when we're looking for a carry method or when we're looking for a holster.
Okay.
You start with the easy cases, the ones that you wear all the time.
And then just kind of branch out from there?
Right. Don't worry about the hard cases. They'll take care of themselves when the special occasions come up. Worry about the day in, day out.
Right. Okay. So kind of switching gears just a little bit since we're into the last segment of the show already. You do training, and I would assume that a lot of the people that end up coming to you, not all, but a lot of, would be female. Is there something that you run into more often? Because most of the women I know, when they get into shooting, have not had much exposure to it before. Is there something that you run into at all with them that they maybe have heard other people say that seem completely rational and well thought out, but is really off-putting to new shooters? Or what's your experience as far as that goes?
I think that people are all individuals, mm-hmm. and they react in quirky, individualistic ways to anything that we say.
Right.
For me, one of the things that it's nails on a chalkboard to me, when I hear a well-meaning, kind person say, well, you know, women are naturally better shooters than men are.
Hmm.
Or, you know, women naturally make better students than men.
I've been guilty of saying that, so I apologize to everyone. I'm sorry.
Do you want to know why that's the nails on the chalkboard for me?
I'm curious, but I want to defend myself and tell you why I say it, but go on.
The reason it's nails on a chalkboard is because that sends a message that says it isn't hard to learn how to shoot.
Okay.
It doesn't take work. It doesn't take effort. So you have a new shooter who might be really, really struggling with it, and you come along and you say encouragingly to her, oh, you should find this easy.
Ah, and suddenly it makes sense.
And so, that's tough.
Well,
and that's really, really tough.
In my defense, what I have noticed when I've taught people to shoot is that for whatever reason, men seem to tie up a lot of ego into shooting. It's something that a guy is supposed to be able to do, I guess. I don't know. But for whatever reason, they don't listen as well is the women I've run into, and I'm sorry for saying so, but that's just been my own personal experience.
Well, I do understand. And, you know, it's funny, again, people are individuals.
Right.
I have awesome students who listen well and who learn who are guys, and I have awesome students who listen well and who learn who are women, and I think that's more up to the individuals. I do think there's an expectation that where people have, and I think Hollywood has done us a terrible disservice by giving us this idea that if we're a good person, of course we can shoot well. Because good guys can shoot. And I think the reality is it's awesome and excellent to have a firearm. That's 90% of the battle right there.
Right.
But the other 10% is going to be work. It is going to be effort. And that's okay. It's okay to find it work.
Right.
And it's good to keep going and to advance your training in that way.
Do you think that it's, I guess we kind of talked about this a little bit earlier, but do you think that it's encouragement that is not coming out as encouragement or is just coming out as patronizing, or what are your thoughts?
Well, again, I don't actually see sexism everywhere. I did have an interesting conversation with somebody online not too long ago, and he was under the impression that any woman-only class couldn't possibly have as high a standard as a co-ed class does.
Hmm.
For me, I think that kind of attitude would be hugely off-putting and patronizing. But the idea that there are different things that people need to hear and that maybe those differences are based on our cultural expectations, I don't have a problem with that at all. I believe everybody responds well to encouragement. The idea that, oh, women are more emotional and men are less emotional, that's not true. Men are taught to respond to their emotions in different ways than women are taught to respond to their emotions. But everybody has emotions.
Right.
So,
well, almost everyone.
well, except for Dr. Spock, but
yeah,
he doesn't count.
I guess not. So I'll apologize to Leonard Nimoy if he's listening right now, just in case. But we got another 2 minutes or so before the end of the show. And I guess one more thing that I wanted to cover before the show's over is just kind of, and you mentioned it, women-only classes. Do you think those are a good idea for someone getting into the sport, or what are your thoughts?
They can be tremendously valuable. They can also be crippling. Again, I want to go back to something you said at the very beginning, which was being supportive in a way that does not encourage growth.
Mm-hmm.
There are some women who, in the context of a women-only class, would use that as an excuse to not work hard or not learn. And if that's the case, then those women need to find an environment that will challenge them and will push them forward. There are other women who need the environment of being surrounded with other women where they will ask the questions that they need to ask. They will ask, good grief, how do I use the toilet when I'm carrying a firearm on my belt? Or they will ask, now, how exactly does that flashbang bra holster work? Or they will ask other questions that they might not feel comfortable asking in a co-ed environment. And here's the really funny thing. If a woman has questions like that, she's not going to tell the guys around her that she has those questions. He won't ever know.
Right. She'll just end up keeping them to
right.
herself. Now, we actually hit the end of the show. Kathy, I really appreciate you coming on. Everyone, you can check out Kathy's website at cornedcat.com. I hope you have a good evening, Kathy.
Thank you very much, John. Very much appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Next week, we're going to be talking to Mr. Caleb Giddings, president of Gun Nuts Media, about whether or not gun magazines and gun media in general have kind of pushed the perception that isn't always true as far as products go. Anyway, check us out next Sunday, 7 p.m. Also, take a look at ballisticradio.com and facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You be safe.